Welcome to the Been There, Done That podcast with Angela Dunn Cartledge. Hello, everybody. This is Angela Dunn Cartledge, and you're listening to the Been There, Done That podcast. Today, we have a fantastic special guest. Mr. Terry Tucker is here to tell us how we can grow through our pain and change our mindset going forward. So thank you so much for being here, Terry, and I can't wait to dig into this more with you. Tell us a little bit about you so that we can set the stage for what we're going to talk about today.
Sure. Well, first of all, Angela, thanks for having me on. I'm really looking forward to talking with you. Yeah, I'll give you a little bit of my background. Born and raised on the South Side of Chicago, oldest of three boys. You can't tell this from looking at me or from my voice.
I was just about to say, I can hear as soon as you said Chicago, I was like, I know where I am. I know this. Okay. My mom grew up in a Western suburb. So she grew up in
Naperville. What was the name of the Western suburb?
Naperville.
Oh, gosh. Yes. There you go. Do I still have the accent?
It's hard. You can't get rid of it. You can't. Period. So yeah, go ahead. I feel more connected to you now. We should be eating pizza while we're talking. But anyway, go ahead.
So I grew up in the South Side, oldest of three boys. You can't tell this from looking at me, but I'm 6'8" tall and actually went to college on a basketball scholarship despite having three knee surgeries in high school. When I graduated from college, I'm really going to date myself now, but this was long before the internet was available to help people find employment. So I moved home to find a job. Fortunately, I found that first job in the corporate headquarters of Wendy's International, the hamburger chain, in their marketing department. That was the good news. Bad news was that I lived with my parents for the next 3.5 years as I helped my mom care for my father and my grandmother, who were both dying of different forms of cancer. Professionally, as I said, started out at Wendy's, and then I actually went to work for the hospital that cared for my father and my grandmother. And then at 37, made a major pivot in my life and became a police officer. Part of what I did during my law enforcement career was I was a SWAT hostage negotiator. After that, I started a school security consulting business, coached girls' high school basketball, which is one of the hardest jobs I've ever had in my life. But for the last 12 years now, I've been battling a rare form of cancer, a rare form of melanoma. And then finally, my wife and I have been married for 31 years. We have one child, a daughter, who's a graduate of the United States Air Force Academy, and is an officer in the new branch of the military, the Space Force.
So I know you as an expert, but I also want to talk to you as a human, because what you've gone through personally, especially with your health and with your own struggle with cancer, I really want to hear your thoughts on how people can navigate those kinds of moments. Obviously, you've also had the experience with your dad and your grandmother and knowing what that looked like too. But I want to hear from you what you felt in those moments and the things that you've gone through as what was not just what was happening to you, but also how your mindset had to shift and how it had to evolve because of those diagnoses.
Yeah, I mean, you have to find purpose in your misery. And you know, I don't want anybody to think that, you know, I didn't go through all the stages of grief. I was diagnosed with a rare form of melanoma in 2012 and was told, you'll probably be dead in 2 years. We have nothing to offer you other than surgery. And I thought, well, you know, you gave me a death sentence. Maybe I can turn that death sentence into a life sentence. But to get there, I had to go through all those stages. And I learned a lot from my father and my grandmother. You know, first, I think there was the denial. I can't possibly have cancer. I've done everything right. And then you get to an anger phase. You know, I can't possibly have cancer. I've done everything right. And then our daughter was in high school when I was diagnosed. So there was sort of a bargaining with God, like, hey, please let me live long enough to see her graduate. And then I got to a point where I absolutely got down, got depressed, felt sorry for myself. And then I just felt like, well, this sucks, but I'm going to have to embrace the suck. I do not like the cards that I've been dealt, but I'm going to have to play these cards to the best of my ability. And I think when you you come to terms with your own mortality. And I love the old Stoic philosophy of momentum mori, which is remember death. Remember that you're going to die, because that gives some urgency. That gives some purpose to your life if you know that you're going to die. And in the West, we don't like to talk about death. We don't address it. We don't deal with it. But when I was able to do that, when I was able to say, you know what? Okay, this is terminal. It's probably going to get me, but it's not going to get me today. So I'm going to do whatever I can to live my best life until it does get me.
I love that. It's not going to get me today. All I have is this moment, right?
I've learned a lot over these 12 plus years of cancer. But two things that I absolutely have learned is, number one, I don't think you truly know yourself until you've been tested by some form of adversity in your life. Whatever that looks like, it doesn't have to be cancer or even a disease. But when you have adverse things happen to you, you really kind of figure out who you are. And the second thing that I've learned, and this may sound a little kind of off the wall to your audience, is I think cancer has made me a better human being. I've been asked, you know, if you could live your life over again without cancer, would you do it? And honestly, Angela, I'm not sure I would. I, you know, as much as it's been ugly and I've lost body parts and all that kind of stuff, I really feel it has gotten me to a point where, you know, so much of my life was doing physical things. You know, I played college basketball, I was on a SWAT team, and now I'm in a wheelchair and I don't have a left leg. How do you balance those? And I think when you can't do what you're good at, you do what's important in life. And I think that's what I've been trying to do.
Yeah, I love that. And I see that you've almost evolved what you're good at. You've taken it and said, I'm going to find the next thing that I'm good at instead of that. You talk about in your work that the key is embracing the pain. The key is to, I've heard people say it as embrace the struggle, right? Talk to us about embracing the pain and what that looks like, not just from a chronic debilitating illness perspective, but from a mindset perspective across the board. I feel like that's a universal concept, that we can do that, whether we're dealing with being stuck in a job that we hate or whatever, or there is this other big thing, a diagnosis of a rare form of cancer that is hitting us. How can we embrace the suck?
Yeah, I think you have to control your mind. If you can't control your mind, your mind dictates your entire body. I'm reading a great book now. Just went right out of my mind. See, this is what happens when you get old. The expectation effect is what it's awesome. Called. And awesome. It talks about how, you know, a lot of times we'd like to think our brains or our minds that, you know, we see a butterfly and we know what a butterfly is and that's a butterfly. But the book talks about, and science is now kind of coming to terms with the brain being more of a predictive organ. In other words, if you and I see, you know, somebody committing a bank robbery, you may say, well, the guy had a red shirt on and, you know, blue jeans. And I may say, no, he had a green shirt on and black pants. Well, we saw the same thing, but our brains predict what we're going to see. It predict what we're going to do. And so if you extrapolate on that, you get to a point where, and we've all heard about the placebo effect, where, you know, I give you a sugar pill and I tell you it's going to cure your cancer, and it does. Because your brain, your mind is so powerful that it understands that a person in a white coat with a bunch of initials after their name is an authority figure and they know what they're talking about. So this is going to cure my cancer. And it does. So I think you have to control your mind. And when I was in college, I went to a military college called the Citadel in Charleston, South Carolina. And one year we had a president by the name of James Stockdale. And he'd retired as a rear admiral from the Navy, but he was a prisoner of war during the Vietnam conflict, spent 8 years in the Hanoi Hilton prisoner of war camp, actually won the Medal of Honor for his effort. And I remember being at an event, somebody asked him, who were the people that survived that brutality, that torture, and all that pain? And he said, well, let me tell you who didn't survive. He said, it wasn't the big, strong, tough guys who thought that they could handle any kind of abuse or torture. And the next thing he said really kind of floored me. He said, the other group that didn't survive were the optimists. He said, these were the people that thought, well, by Thanksgiving or Christmas or Easter, we will be released or let go. And he said, when Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Easter came and went and they weren't released, he said, those people died of a broken heart. He said, the people that survived were the people who understood what they could control, which according to him were basically the thoughts in our mind and the breathing in our lungs. Everything else was the discretion of the enemy, and controlled that. And Angel, I think that's where we get in trouble. We try to control all these things that are outside our purview. And what I recommend to people who are in that situation is just take a piece of paper and write down everything that's bothering you, every single thing, put it on a piece of paper, and then go through and cross out all the things that you don't have any control over. And what's left are things that you can influence. Spend your time and your energy trying to deal with those things.
And the things that you can control are within your body, generally speaking. Yes. They're the things that you can reframe about your thoughts. And like you said, taking a breath in and out, putting food in your body, putting water in your body, if you get those things, you know, it's simple.
It is. And we make life so much more complicated than it has to be just by all our thoughts and things like that. And, you know, one of the words that gets thrown around a lot today is motivation. You know, you've got to be motivated and stuff like that. I mean, I even named my company Motivational Check. So, yes, I think it's important. But motivation, nobody's going to motivate you. That's got to come from you. That's got to come from inside you. But I don't think that's enough. I think you need two more things in order to get to where you want to get to be successful, whatever that ends up being. The first one is discipline. It's kind of like you said, you know, hey, I could drink water and, you know, I could do all this stuff, but you're going to have the discipline to do it. I'm going to do it every day. I'm going to commit to it. And the other thing is you got to have is good habits. You know, I always think of it as a three-legged stool. You know, if one of the legs is missing or shorter than the other, you're going to be wobbly. You're not going to want to sit on that. So if you're motivated, but you have terrible habits and don't have the discipline, you're never going to get to where you want to be. Just like if you're, you know, you have great discipline and you're motivated, but you have terrible habits, probably not going to be where you want to be. So you need all three of those things, I think, and you need them all in an amount that is helpful and beneficial to you to get to the point where you want to be in life.
Striking a balance, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Find a way to do all of those things. Not perfectly. We're not asking for perfection here.
Nope.
I know Terry Tucker is not asking for perfection.
Nope.
I really loved what we've talked about before, but also what the research that I did on your website about never quitting. And when you're in an acute grief situation, when you have lost someone that's really important to you, something horrible has happened and, you know, something big has happened to you, or you have made a bad decision for yourself and it has come to fruition. In order to prevent complacency, you can't be still. Being still, while good in some instances, especially in those first moments of shock or in the acute pain, you just can't stay there for very long. And that very long is, of course, individual and very subjective. Talk to us about your concept of never quitting, not giving up, and giving it all you can at almost all times, you know, with an asterisk at the end.
Sure. So we're recording this while the Olympics are going on right now. And Usain Bolt, fastest man in the world, and he has a great quote. He's a Jamaican sprinter. And he said, I spent 4 years learning how to run 9 seconds. And he said, so many people give up on their hopes, their dreams after just a couple months. So I love that. It's that, you know what? I'm just going to keep going. You're going to make mistakes, and that's okay. Understand mistakes are part of success. If you want to be successful, you got to make mistakes. You got to do things that you, oh man, I shouldn't have done that. But what did you learn from it and apply it to yourself? I mean, I've just got this ridiculous mindset. One of my nurses, I was just treated a couple of weeks ago, and my nurse said, you know, the reason we love you is that you just keep coming back. No matter how much you hurt, no matter how much you're throwing up, no matter how much you're shaking or whatever, you're going to show up tomorrow and you're going to show up the next day and you're going to show. And that's why we love you, because you're part of the family, because we can count on you. We know you're going to be there. You're going to be able to count on yourself. And you're absolutely right. There are times when you just need to take a step back and be like, you know what? I just need a break right now. I get that. I totally get it. I am there a lot, but it's amazing what you can do. And I'm going to tell you a story. True story happened back in the 1950s at Johns Hopkins University. This professor was doing an experiment with rats. Now, hang with me. I know I'm talking about rats, so hang with me here. So he took rats and he put them in a tank of water that was over their head. And he wanted to see how long the average rat could tread water. And the average rat treaded water for about 15 minutes. And just as those rats were getting ready to sink and drown, he reached in, grabbed them, pulled them out, dried them off, and let them rest for a while. And then he took the exact same rats and put it back in that exact same tank of water. And the second time around, on average, those rats treaded water for 60 hours. Now think about that. First time, 15 minutes. It's not like you're going to flunk a test or your business is going to go under. You're going to die. And the second time around, 60 hours, which taught me two things. Number one, the importance of hope in our lives, that if we know we're doing the right thing, if we know we're motivated, got good habits, and we got discipline, maybe not today, maybe not this month, maybe not even this year, but there's a good chance we'll get to where we want to be. And the second thing it taught me was just how much more our physical bodies can handle than we ever thought they could. Now, don't get me wrong. I think we all have a breaking point, but that breaking point is so much further down the road. And that goes back to controlling our mind, controlling our brain, because our brains say, hey, this hurts. This is uncomfortable. Stop it. Knock it off. And we listen to that. But our bodies can do so much more if we just push through that pain.
That's really fascinating. That's like a 4,000% increase. I mean, it's not like it took years to build up to that number. It was two sessions. Yeah. Practically back to back with just a short rest in between. And that brings me to the resilience aspect, because to me, you gave yourself a minute to think about a strategy or a system that you could put in place. And I'm not giving the rats a whole lot of credit in that, but I'm saying that they had some piece in the puzzle, right? That they then become part of the next piece and are proof that there is a way through. It's going to require effort on some kind of part. It's energetic, right? That is important in the whole process.
One of the chapters I put in my book is most people think with their fears and their insecurities instead of using their minds. And Angela, I've done that in my life. I know I've done that. You know, I wanted to start something or get involved in a project and you kind of pull back and you're like, ooh, maybe I'm not smart enough, or maybe I don't have enough information, or what will people say about me if I fail? That's thinking with our fears and our insecurities. That's not thinking with our minds. And, you know, again, going back to, you know, what are we learning here? What's the theme here? You've got a lot of control over things in your life, on what you say and how you say, and we all talk to each other, whether we like to admit it or not, we talk to ourselves. You know, make sure that you're giving yourself good talk, because we all become what we think.
And I've always thought that the saying, what people think of you is none of your business, is a weird thing, because I totally disagree. They have so much impact on, especially in a business owner's world, they have so much impact on whether I'm successful or not. If they like me and they like what I'm offering, then they're going to buy it or they're going to do something about it. All of that aside, it still comes back to the fact that you can't make decisions for your life and for your business based on everybody else's opinions. You're never going to meet that standard of everybody else and what they're looking for.
Yeah. And why do you care what other people think when those people haven't even tried what you failed at in their life? You know, I mean, and I know when you're young, you want to be part of the group and all that kind of stuff. And I get that. But I mean, we get so caught up in this whole, you know, what are people saying about my, you know, they like my hair today on social media, or they like what I'm wearing today on social media. And it drives me crazy. There's a great book called Do Hard Things. And it's written by a man by the name of Steve Magnus. And Magnus used to be the head track and field coach at the University of Minnesota. And he talks about a I guess a psychological study that was done at the university with undergraduates. And the undergraduates were asked to sit in a room for like 15 or 20 minutes. It wasn't like for 3 days or something like that, without anything, no devices, nothing with them. The only thing in the room was a table and a chair. And on the table was a buzzer. And if you press the buzzer, you received an electric shock. 68% of the men and 25% of the women shocked themselves, including one guy who shocked himself on average every 5 seconds. And what the conclusion of the study was, is we are not comfortable in our own skin. We're not comfortable in our own minds. We don't like what's going on in our heads. We take our validation from that little box that we have in our hand all the time. And hearing that, and I didn't feel like I was in that category at all, I spend about 10 minutes every day just sitting alone, unplugged. You know, I don't, it's not meditation, it's not prayer. It's just let your mind go wherever it goes so that you can be comfortable with your own thoughts.
It's so critical because my husband and I have always had this joke that if it's too quiet for too long, Ange will make up a story. In my own mind, my imagination will just start creating, it must be the apocalypse outside, it's too quiet. You know, it's those kinds of things. And if you send an email, as an example, and then you're waiting, you're still waiting, still waiting. They must have thought that the email was terrible. I bet I had a typo. Let me go back and read it again. You start to create information to fill in the gap. You start to do that all by yourself, allowing yourself to have those uncomfortable moments creates that space where you don't have to fill in the gap. You don't have to do that as often. You're building that practice or that muscle so that you don't have to do that. You don't have to shock yourself, my goodness, to keep yourself from having to sit still and be quiet, right? That's crazy. That's really fascinating. Fascinating human psychology, right?
Exactly.
We're interesting creatures. Tell us about sustainable excellence. I want to hear more about, I've read some of the book, but not all. I want to hear what your take is and why you created the book.
Never wanted to create the book, to be honest with you. You know, never expected to write a book. There's sort of that old joke that says when we talk to God, it's called prayer. And when God talks to us, it's called schizophrenia. So God never said, you know, hey, Terry, write a book. But I really believe what God did was put enough people in my path that were making the same suggestion over and over and over. And when that happens, and that's happened several times in my life, I think I need to pay attention to that message that's coming through. And so really sustainable excellence was born out of two conversations I had. One was with a former player that I had coached in high school who had moved to the area in Colorado where my wife and I live with her fiance. And the four of us had dinner one night. And I remember saying to her after dinner that I was excited that she was living close and I could watch her find and live her purpose. And Angela, she got real quiet for a while. And then she looked at me and she said, well, coach, what do you think my purpose is? I said, I have absolutely no idea what your purpose is, but that's what your life should be about. Finding the reason or reasons you were put on the face of this earth. And there is a reason or reasons. Using your unique gifts and talents and living that reason. So that was one conversation. And then I had a young man reach out to me from college on social media. And he said, what do you think are the most important things that I should learn, not to just be successful in my job or in business, but to be successful in life? You know, and I didn't want to give him the get up early, work hard, help. I didn't want to give him sort of the cliches that we all know. And so I spent some time taking some notes and kind of had these 10 thoughts, these 10 ideas, these 10 principles. And so I sent them to him. And then I stepped back and I was like, well, you know, I got a life story that fits underneath that principle, or I know somebody whose life emulates this principle. So literally during the 4 to 5 month period where I was healing after I had my leg amputated, I sat down at the computer every day and I built stories, and they're real stories about real people underneath each of the principles. And that's how the book came to be.
I love that.
Let me throw this out because I think, you know, we all talk about purpose and, you know, we'd love it to be aligned with our job or occupation and stuff like that. But I think it's more important who you work with and who you work for than it is the work that you do. Find people that care about you. Find people that are willing to invest in you. Find people that want you to be successful. Hitch your wagon to those people and climb your mountains together. Because, you know, the work is the work. But the relationships, the connections, those kind of things, those things are amazing. And those things are really what make life worth living.
I totally agree. And that goes back to what I've always heard. If you are working for someone else, which both of us have big dreams not to do that. But if we're working for somebody else, that most people stay because of that relationship they have with the people that they work with, not the work that they're doing, not how much they're getting paid, not the building that they're going to, but the relationships that they're building with other people. And that's where I think we've gotten off track a little bit, is that we need each other. We need the relationships to be able, not to boost up our own self-confidence. That's not what I mean, but it also builds that resilience muscle. It helps us to see what's going on around us, to change our perspective, to give us an open-mindedness that may not have come if we're, you know, in our little box and sitting very alone and in a quiet place. But I think there's balance, just like what we were talking about a minute ago, about being able to sit still and being able to have those moments too. You have to have both. And it's finding that right balance for yourself that I think is important, especially in a situation where you're given a diagnosis of cancer, a rare form of melanoma that will require surgeries and, as you love to say, losing body parts. But then also the other hard things that happen to us. In my case, losing a child and having a hard time getting to a place where I thought my purpose was to be a mom. I'm talking about a balance between your quiet time and your people time. And even whether you're an introvert, an extrovert, which I think the two of us are extroverts, but you know, whatever. I want people to be able to find that themselves, to find those things that really light them up that way.
Yeah, but people have to look at it that way, you know, and I think small minds and weak people kill big dreams. You know, most people never think or contemplate what it means to be great in their life. And, you know, I heard a quote one time that said that the richest real estate in the world are cemeteries, because they're rich in books never written, businesses never started, relationships never pursued. When you get into the cemetery, don't be one of those people. Explore everything, do everything. And I especially with younger people, I heard somebody, and I wish I could remember who this was so I could give them credit for it. But, you know, we tend to make these arbitrary goals in our life. But, you know, by the time I'm 25, I want to be making $100,000 a year. By the time I'm 32, I want to be married and have a family. And they're arbitrary. And when we're not there, then we get depressed. Well, I'm not where I'm supposed to be, or I'm not where I think I'm being. This person said, look at your life in decades. So in your 20s, do everything. Get into all kinds of trouble. Make all kinds of mistakes. Just get into life, whatever that looks like for you. And then in your 30s, find those two or three things that really resonate with you, that you want to spend more time on. And then in your 40s, you know, when you're older, you've got more experience, you're more established, your prefrontal cortex has come together and grown, that find that one thing and dig into it. And then in your 50s and 60s, you can reap the rewards of everything you did in your 20s, 30s, and 40s. And I love that, because it's, you know, there isn't that arbitrary date that, okay, I'm 25 now, well, I'm a failure because I haven't done this. No, you've got a whole decade to explore, experiment, and figure it out for yourself.
And that all of that stuff is fluid anyway.
Yeah, it is.
You can pick, you're right, you can pick. If you decide that a decade wasn't long enough to go crazy,
sure,
do it for 15 years. I mean, you have that, you have those moments where you can pick and choose. Even if you told the entire world what you planned to do and then you didn't, it's still your goal. You can adjust it. You can make it what it needs to be. You can say, you know what I learned in that year? That I don't want to do any of that. I thought I did. I thought it was my passion. It's not. I want to go this way. It's your goal. It's your life. Make it what you need it to be so that when you get to the cemetery, you don't have regrets, so that you don't have the things that are left over that you didn't do?
I firmly believe we're all given unique gifts and talents. You know, I firmly believe there's never been anybody like me in the history of the world, and there never will be anybody like you in the history of the world. And when you think about that, there's a lot of power in that. I am that unique. I am that special. And who is somebody else to tell me what I can and cannot do? And I also know that, you know, I think there's a lot of people out there that, you know, get the pressure from, you know, your dad. Hey, are you going to win the family business? Or, hey, your mom was a doctor. Do you want to be a doctor? I remember I had a friend when I was growing up in high school. He used to take his entire locker home every day, all his books, really smart guy. We used to call him Doc because we thought he was going to be a doctor. And we didn't find out till later that he never wanted to be a doctor. His mom and dad wanted him to be a doctor. So, you know, it wasn't until he got to be an adult where it was, mom and dad, I don't want to be a doctor. I want to be in business. I want to build things. I want to be, you know, a site manager for a management company and that. So, and that's what he's doing now. He's doing what he wants to do. So there are a lot of people out there that are kind of, hey, you need to do this or you need, I mean, my own dad, you know, hey, major in business. I'm like, okay. I mean, at 17 or 18, I didn't know what to major in. I mean, can I major in basketball? Because that's what I'm good at, you know. I did it because my dad told me to do it, not because I had any great passion for business. And if I had to do it over again, probably would have majored in something else. Not that I didn't learn from it. It just wasn't, I wasn't really excited about going to class.
Yeah, and that I'm the same way in that I thought I could take what I was excited about from what I liked.
Yeah.
And that turned out to be a really crazy idea. I was going to be a chemical engineer because I liked chemistry. And when I got into freshman chemistry, we did in the first 2 weeks what we spent our whole senior year learning. And I thought, pardon me, but I think I'm in the wrong place. I might need to shift my mindset a little bit and my position, my geography in this building. But that's the thing is that, again, we tend to put so much weight on the goal, especially if we've told somebody else about it, because then we have to explain ourselves. And I guess I'm saying, and I think you are too, that if we just give each other more grace and say, oh, okay, be flexible. Who cares? I can control the fact that I didn't want to be a chemical engineer anymore. That wasn't really what I didn't want to learn that way. I wanted to learn in a different way. So I was a business major too, but it was by accident.
Hey, I tried chemical engineering. You know what? Not for me. I'm going to try something else. I'm going to pivot and do something else in my life. I'm going to do business. Oh yeah, that might work. Yeah, I mean, did you learn something from chemical engineering? I'm sure you did. And as long as that's the case, you're a better person for it.
And I love that you give yourself, honestly, it's just about giving yourself the ability to, again, control the controllables, because you can control what that goal looks like. And if you want to move on and you want to have the ability to grow and to do something different, then you can, period. Doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter what your circumstances are.
You know, we all have a destiny. We all have a road that we're on. And then we see somebody, it's like, well, I want that because they have it. Well, I think God put a commandment, you know, do not covet your neighbor's goods. It's okay to want stuff, but it's not okay to want it because somebody else has it.
The point is that I need to be the best Angela, and then I can be the other thing that I want to be. But I need to be the best Angela. And that is what I love about talking to you, is that at no time do you, I'm going to use a pun, that you don't stand on your circumstances. You don't say, yeah, right. Thank you. That's, I'm thinking in my head, like, Angela, are you really just going to use the word stand with this man? But it's not about it defining or making decisions for you. You have that power. You decide when it's time to clean out the closet. You decide when it's time to take a break. But you don't have to be defined by the circumstance. You don't.
No, you don't. And, you know, just listen to our conversation. I think one of the things that's really helped me sort of, you know, crack the ice a little bit with people is humor. you know, I'm self-deprecating all the time. I'm always making jokes about myself, you know, and things like that. I remember when I had my foot amputated, I was kind of, I'm going to use the word walk. I was hobbling out of the hospital, and there was a woman standing by the entrance, and she was just staring. You know, you've seen people that have like stared almost like right through you. And I'm like, is she looking at me? And I looked around, and there was nobody else there. So I'm like, all right, I can't let this go. So I got right up to her. I turned and I looked at her and I said, don't worry, it'll grow back. And then I just kept walking. And I turned around and she had this look on her face like, is this kind of like a salamander or something like that? You know, he cut off his tail, you know, something grows back and something. But I mean, using humor to make people comfortable. Because I mean, when I roll into a room, I mean, when I used to walk into a room, I was 6'8" and, you know, just my presence said something. Now my wheelchair and the fact that I don't have a leg says something. And so I have to kind of diffuse that tension, and I use humor to do that. I love that the 1% rule, you know, it's kind of how do you eat the elephant? One bite at a time. Well, how do you get better? I mean, think about, you know, I want to be a better salesperson. Well, okay, that's a huge goal. That's a big goal. What does that mean? How do you want to be? What if you were 1% better every single day? At the end of 30 days, you're 30% better as a salesperson. And 1% is a whole lot easier to swallow than I want to be a better salesperson. So,
right,
you know, do that. Be 1% better every single day. At the end of a quarter, you're 90% better than when you started. And
yeah,
you're moving in the right direction. So
I love that. And so we want to get there now.
Right.
We want the, you know, hurry up. I want this goal completed, because it's hard in the middle. Going back to one bite at a time, just make an incremental change. Tomorrow you can build on it. Take two steps today. Then tomorrow you can take two more steps. I remember learning to run. I don't like running as an exercise, but when somebody was trying to teach me the way to do that, go outside, run to the next driveway, okay, run back. Tomorrow, go to two driveways down and run back. You're still building it. You're just not, you don't need to be able to run 26.2 miles right today.
Right.
I'm asking you to train. I'm asking you to build it and get there in 90 days or whatever that looks like. Yeah. It's just, to me, it gives hope. These moments of the smaller bite-sized pieces give me hope. And I hope it gives the audience hope to be able to do something today and continue to move forward, move through, and be able to grow. It's so critical.
Absolutely.
I love it. What can we do to stay in touch with you? What can we do as an audience? How can we find you? Where are the places that we can get to you?
Yeah, the easiest way to get to me is through motivationalcheck.com, which is my website and blog. My social media links are on there. I have recommendations for books to read, videos to watch, and you can leave me a message. And that's all at motivationalcheck.com.
Perfect. And we've got the book, Sustainable Excellence, that we can all get and read and build our life that way. And I'm just glad to know you, Terry Tucker. Thank you for being so open and honest and I guess being self-deprecating in your humor. I would never want to make fun of anything that you've gone through. I think it's life-changing stuff, and you've already said you would do it again, even if you had the chance to go back. But I just am thankful for you being willing to be here. I really appreciate it.
Well, Angela, thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed talking with you, and I think your audience is going to get value from this episode.
Awesome. Me too.